is Reverend Dr. Wynn Henderson, and this podcast is an interview with Greg Robinson. And Greg is in the program at Western Carolina Rescue Ministries, and he's going to tell us his story, and we're going to have a little discussion about addiction from his point of view today. Hi, Greg. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good. How old are you, Greg?
I'm 27 years old.
27 years old. Now, you have been in this program twice, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Going back to the first time that you got into the program, I want you to take me from anything that's important in your early life up until the time that you made the decision to go to Western Carolina Ministries program. If you just kind of tell me that story.
Well, all right. I mean, it really all started out from, honestly, from the first memory I have of my mom. She was an alcoholic for growing up, for my entire childhood, and she's just now been freed of the addiction as well. But I think that's where a lot of my problems started, was just having grown up in that kind of environment, and my mom was really she was my best friend growing up, but not in the good sense of where, you know, it was a healthy best friend. It was like, I started drinking when I was probably 12 or 13 years old with my mom, and, you know, it started out as like a, oh, my mom's cool kind of thing, and then it just turned into, it turned into stuff a lot worse, which I think that's what kind of led me down the road of to addiction, because I started with alcohol, and then I moved to marijuana, and then to pain pills, and pretty much everything else. But I wasn't a Christian back then, you know.
Was your mom a Christian?
No. Well, I mean, we would go to church, but I'd say we would just go to church mainly on Easter, and I would go with my friends every once in a while, but it wasn't really, we weren't following, you know, God.
Okay.
So really,
you kind of grew up in a dysfunctional family unit with your mother as an alcoholic. What about your father?
My dad, he was kind of codependent and somewhat verbally abusive. You know, he enabled my mom, and they were always fighting every day. And it was just, I was always the one having to step in the middle of them and be, I guess you could say, just be the adult, really. And I had to grow up real quick, pretty much, because mom and dad had my little sister. And that was probably, after she had my little sister, that was probably the worst point of her addiction. And my dad was working nights, so I could never go out and do anything because I always had to stay home and watch my sister and, you know, kind of take care of her. But my dad, in a lot of senses, he was a good dad, and he still is. You know, it was just, there were certain things emotionally that I needed him there for. And, you know, the same with my mom, that they just weren't present. And, you know, I think that affected me a lot as a child and as a teenager with some of the decisions I made. And it really even still affects me to this day, you know, with just self-esteem and stuff like that, things that I have to deal with on a daily basis.
I take it that your father was not a particularly religious man?
No, again, you know, we were all really just kind of go to church on Sunday because, I mean, on Easter, because that's what everybody does on Easter, and, you know, full of good intentions, always wanted to go to church and always wanted to, you know, but it just never, it never worked out that way.
And okay. So you grew up and you started because you had it around you in the house, started with alcohol, and then you got on to some other drugs, and that went on until you were how old?
Until I was 22, I believe.
What made you decide that something was wrong, that that you needed to correct, something that you had to do something different in your life?
Well, to be honest with you, I've never really, you know, through that period of my life, I always knew God was real, and I always knew that He was there. I just never wanted to follow Him. You know, I wanted to do my own thing. But literally everything I tried to do just blew up in my face or wound up in failure. You know, I'd go to one dead end to the next. And I always had, even doing the drugs and alcohol and partying, I always had that yearning in my heart. You know, I could hear God calling me, you know, and saying, you know, when are you going to quit? When are you going to, you know, come to me? And after going to jail, probably, I think it was 10 to 12 times I've been to jail. after that last time, you know, my dad would always bail me out of jail, which never really helped me, you know. So I think the past two times I went, the second to last time I went, I called, you know, my dad, and I was like, hey, let me sit here. You know, I need to sit in jail, but he bailed me out anyways. And then, luckily, the last time I went to jail, my probation officer wouldn't let me out. So that was, I mean, some people might say I'm dumb for saying this, but it was really a blessing to me to be able to sit in jail and actually be able to think about things. And while I was in jail, I picked up a Bible and I started reading the book of Proverbs. And the verse that is still my life verse to this day is Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. You know, and
what is that, Craig?
That's trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him and He will direct your paths.
Good verse.
Yes, I absolutely love it, and I try and live every day according to it. But, you know, just reading the Bible in jail, and I was really reaching out for God, and, you know, I asked Him. I would say that I became a Christian in jail. I didn't profess it verbally, but, you know, that's where I believe I became a Christian. You know, finally accepted God, and then, you know, I think I sat in jail for a little over 3 months, and I finally just called my dad one day, you know, because I decided if I keep doing this, that I'm going to wind up in here again and again, because I was seeing all these older men around me, 40, 50 years old, talking about, you know, where they're going to get their next fix whenever they get out. And God just kind of spoke to me and said, Greg, this is going to be you if you keep doing this. And so I called my dad, and I told him to go look under my bed, and I had a bunch of pills, I had a bunch of paraphernalia and marijuana under there, and I told him to take it all and throw it away because I was done. And I, you know, asked him to find me somewhere to go where I could get better. And my cousin had actually been here before, and he's still sober to this day, and that's what led me here to the rescue mission.
I see. Most of the people who are listening to your testimony here today don't have the slightest idea of what Western Carolina Rescue Mission is about. Could you kind of give us a little promo on what they do for people?
Absolutely. They basically, they have a recovery program. They have a homeless shelter also. But what they do in the recovery program is, it's, they accept guys into the program. It's kind of an open door policy. So you stay because you want to stay and because, you know, you want healing and you want transformation in your life. But really, you know, it's not the program itself, but it's like a safe place to come, and it's really the way my counselor describes it, is it's like a God's operating table. You know, he just finds all the things that are wrong with us, and if you really be honest with yourself, I think that's very important here, is being honest with yourself, then you can be transformed. And we have classes every day that we go to, you know, to learn about the Bible and just learn about God, and you know, it's not really the mission itself and the program itself that saves you. It's how eager you are to seek God, you know, because God really honors the verse where he says, draw near to me and I will draw near to you. And if you'll really just devote yourself while you're in here, you know, you can really grow and get healing.
Greg, over the last 30 years, I have counseled many, many, many people with problems similar to yours, and they have various symptoms of the disease of addiction. I'd like to read you the symptoms that go along with this disease that you have, and then at the end, you can tell me if you've had several of them or what. Okay?
Sure.
The disease of addiction has the following symptoms: anxiety or nervousness, depression, pain, either physical or emotional, loneliness, lack of love, a void in one's life, a feeling of emptiness, unworthiness, a sense of failure, sorrow, insecurity, guilt, shame, unhappiness, lack of acceptance, lack of energy, fear, boredom, resentment, self-pity, the need for immediate gratification and pleasure, and suicidal thoughts. Have you had any of those symptoms?
I've had all of them.
Okay, so you make my point. You know, most of the people that are running around these days, whether they'll admit that they are suffering from the disease of addiction or not, are. And the way that you can tell that is because these are the things that are going wrong in their lives. And this is what people want to get rid of. They don't want to have those symptoms.
Yeah. I mean, it's really... All you're doing is running from it, and you're just masking it through drugs. You're not getting rid of the problem. You're not, you know, a lot of people don't want to actually face the problems, and for a long time, neither did I.
Right.
Because it's harder to face the issues you have and to face all those things than it is to just go pick up a bottle of alcohol or, you know, smoke a joint and just get rid of it for a couple hours and, you know.
You're absolutely correct. Now, I believe that what we're talking about here is spiritual warfare.
Absolutely.
Warfare between good and evil. Warfare between God and Satan. Do you agree?
I do.
Okay. Now, if that's the case, do you believe that we ought to get the message to people as early as possible, to children even, so that they don't go through what you've been through?
Oh, yes, definitely. I think the earlier you can get to a person, the better, because I feel like the younger you are, the more impressionable you are, and the more, you know, childlike in your thinking than you are when you're an adult, because I feel like the older you get, the more stubborn you kind of get, and the more set in your ways, and, you know, so I think the earlier on, the better.
My new book that just came out on Thanksgiving Day is called Freedom from Addiction, Roman numeral 2, How to Help Your Spouse, Child, or Grandchild Cure Their Addictive Disease. And it opens with a letter from addiction to the world. I'd like to read you that letter, and you think about it and see if it kind of hits home for you, okay? My name is addiction. I am waging war against all nations and do not plan to take prisoners. Like a thief in the night, I will pillage your people, rob them of their dignity, peace of mind, and eventually their lives. The world will be in shambles before I'm through. The more the merrier, red, yellow, black, white, none are precious in my sight. Rich or poor, I have no favorites, but I must admit, I have fun picking on the sad and lonely, the weak and sick, and I really get a kick out of young people who do not have a clue. It is a quick seduction to entangle them in my web. They are mine from a single puff on a reefer to the pop of a rubber band and from the first taste of liquor to the bottle's last drop. It is easy to enslave them on social media screens, entice them into sexual promiscuity, and convince them that they need a cigarette or another Twinkie. There are over 20 addictive behaviors in my arsenal. Yeah, that's my greatest thrill. Enslave them young, and I will have them for life. Now, don't get me wrong. I was invited to this party, and they made me the main attraction. And realizing that I was in the land of the innocent, I took advantage like a fox in a hen house. Just try a little, I would whisper. That's all it takes, a small temptation to get them started, and they do the rest. Making sure they have all the crappy dope and the cheap liquor they need is easy. They will snort, shoot, or drink anything. It's really fun to put pesticides and all manner of trash in their stash. It's like watching an already dead man's duel with a pistol with one bullet. They are soon mine because there are only 5 empty chambers. AIDS really adds another level of satisfaction. The ultimate thrill is to watch them struggle in pain as their emaciated bodies lay dying. The last words they speak are often these, "What have I done to myself?" When they're dead and gone, I get a bonus. The lives of their family is in tatters. The family is grieving because they fiercely loved you, my prey. The damage of addiction is vast, wide, and long. Mother dies from heartache, but the real culprit was all the grief and stress that she went through. Daddy does not linger long either. Why stay when all his money was long gone before they buried you? It does appear that there is one thrill left. Your parents both go to their graves wondering if they will meet you in heaven. They're not sure, because the last time they saw you on earth, you were blaming all your problems on them, cursing them, and demanding money. Your daddy always felt the bad choices that he made in his life somehow rubbed off on you. And just to let you know, I did get a kick out of watching you cringe in the corner as you watched your daddy beat your mother. Unfortunately for me, they both got it right with God before they died, and he rescued their sorry souls. Most of your brothers and sisters rarely think of you today. They're just glad to be rid of the guilt, shame, and embarrassment they felt every time they looked at the shell of humanity that you ended up being. Now the game is not quite finished. Your little brother was closely watching all your debauchery, and now he thinks he might give it a try. And surprise, surprise, you left a baby in the belly of your last partner, a baby that does not have a chance. He is just your last sacrifice. You turned out just like I wanted, completely destroyed inside and out. Your eyes are yellow from all the booze. Hepatitis and liver damage would have killed you anyway, but it gives me great joy to announce that your appetite for momentary escape from reality took you much sooner. A shell of your former self, alone without family, you left this world high as a kite in total oblivion to the darkness you were about to enter. The darkness filled with all the rejected, discarded souls that I have tortured and killed. Your so-called friends stole your few possessions at the inn, and disappeared in the night before your body was cold, and 911 never got a call. I feel like gloating. You lost your chance to make a change. All the talk of repentance and redemption went right over your head. Like a sheep led to slaughter, you were an easy target. Had you known a very simple prayer, you would have not been so easy to reel in. We may have never met. Your parents were older when they finally changed their ways, much too late to do you any good. I waited patiently until I knew you were ready. I pretended to be your friend. I bolstered your low self-esteem and made you temporarily feel like a king, but only temporarily, I'm proud to say. Just a footnote to rub it in, you could have been a man with everything. Nice family, beautiful home, a pillar of the community, respected by all your family and friends. Your life could have been filled with purpose as you reached out to help your fellow man. You could have had all this peace, joy, and happiness in life if you had opened your eyes and realized your value as a child of God. If you had allowed him into your life to be your constant friend and advisor. God gave you all the tools you needed to complete your mission in life, but you didn't use them. Yes, one simple prayer, "Dear God, please save me through the blood of Jesus Christ," would have protected you from me. You know, just the mention of those names, God and Jesus, completely steals all my joy. That's the reason I keep my flock under the influence, so they cannot hear the sweet voice of Jesus calling them, "Come home, my child, come home." Yes, that is what you are, a lost child who ran out of chances. You are now lost in darkness, and you are mine forever. And now, I'm sure you can figure out the rest of the story. It's been a pleasure wrecking your life and stealing your soul. Your friend, Addiction, also known as Satan. Was that at home?
Yeah, it did. I was thinking the whole time about how, you know, you could replace that with addiction with Satan, you know.
Well, you and I were thinking on the same page.
Yeah.
Really. Because addiction is the embodiment of what Satan has in his tool chest to maim and kill people. In John 10:10, the Bible says, "The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly." So, if children were to hear that letter in schools, which they won't do because schools don't believe in combining anything about religion and schooling,
yeah,
it would make a big difference, you know, if they knew what they were up against,
right,
rather than just, you know, not having a clue, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, something I've learned, you know, through growing up and through my walk with God is that, you know, knowledge, if you're walking with God, knowledge is kind of accountability to yourself. If you know that something's bad for you, then at that point, to me, you know, you're kind of accountable to yourself, and, you know, that causes conviction when you go to do something wrong. So I think kids being aware of it at a younger age, you know, will, I mean, they'll have the knowledge, but then when they get to the situation or, you know, in that moment when, you know, Satan's right there whispering, saying, "Hey, just one time," you know, maybe they can just remember that letter and say, no, not this one time, because I know what's coming next.
I hope you're right. Now, I believe that you will agree with me that the cause of addiction is a person's low self-esteem. They don't value themselves enough. And so they're out there looking around in society for what makes them feel better. And generally, it's what's common and available. And all those things that are common and available are generally bad for you. And this low self-esteem comes on because the individual does not have enough spiritual development or spiritual consciousness. And I wrote a book once called The Four Questions, which are four spiritual questions that if a person knew the answer to the questions and could apply that to their lives, they wouldn't very much have any need for the addictive behaviors. And those questions are, who am I? Where did that come from? What am I doing here? And where am I going when I'm done? Now, I know that different people can answer those questions different ways, but I'll tell you the way that I answer them that keeps me on the straight and narrow path and away from Satan is, who am I? I'm a child of God. Where did I come from? I came from God. What am I doing here? I'm here to do God's will in my life. And where am I going when I'm done? I'm going home to God. Well, that's real simple, isn't it? But if that's what you really believed, it would make all the difference in the world to how you live your life, I think.
Yeah, I think if we could just take it that simply and believe it that simply, but then I think that's where Satan steps in and throws in all these other questions and starts to confuse you, and then you kind of just get lost on the path and you lose those questions. He just pulls you away from them, you know, onto a rabbit trail, and then, you know, it just leads to hopelessness because you feel like those questions can't be answered.
Yeah. Well, you know, Satan's been called the great deceiver, the great liar, you know, and I'm sure that's a very adequate description. He wants to tell you all kinds of lies to confuse you and to bring you down and to kill you and take your soul. Now, one of the things, like in one of the spiritual programs, the 12-step program, 12-step is, as a result of these previous steps and everything, I'm going to help bring my knowledge and what I've learned from the program to others. Do you have a feeling, a need of wanting to tell other people what you've been through and how it's affected you?
Yes, absolutely. I believe when I share my story, I like to just, you know, pray to God and just say, you know, I don't care if it just hits one person, because you never know what anybody's going through in that moment, and you never know, you know, how your words affect other people. But, you know, I've had people walk up to me after I've shared my story, you know, and tell me they're going through the same exact thing, or they have a child who's going through the same exact thing. And, you know, that just confirms to me that what I've went through in my life, God's using for good in other people's lives. I mean, it wasn't fun for me going through it, and I'm not, if I could go back in time and change everything, I wouldn't change anything, you know. God uses what I've done to make me who I am today and to share that with others and maybe help somebody.
Right. Greg, are you familiar with the company called Meetup.com?
Is that one of those, like, social network things?
Yeah, sort of. It's a company that takes what people are interested in, let's say hiking or socializing or playing the piano or whatever like that, and they bring them in groups together over the internet so that they can have meetings and talk about those things that they're interested in.
Right.
Well, I just started a meetup group, which the first meeting is going to be on December the 7th. It's a Wednesday night, 7 o'clock, at Earth Fair at Westgate Shopping Center in Asheville. And the name of the meetup group is Finding Your Life Purpose. And I think that that is so important because so many people don't have a clue to that third question, why am I here?
Right.
And if they could find out a purpose for their life and could concentrate on that, they wouldn't be concentrating on all the bad things that's going to hurt them.
Right.
You know, because you can't serve two masters at the same time. It's going to be one or the other. And so I'm hoping that many, many people will avail themselves of that meeting and will have an opportunity during that meeting possibly to find out what their purpose in life is. And so that's why I wanted to share that with you, since the first one is coming up next week. And the other thing that I wanted to tell you was your story is going to be featured on iTunes in their podcast section of iTunes.com. And a person can go over to iTunes, download it, and then go to the podcast part of their program. Mostly they sell music and things, but they also have a podcast part. Once you get to their podcast section, and there are hundreds and hundreds of different things, podcast types, you search under Alternative Health and look for my podcast, which is called Freedom from Addiction. And when they get there, they'll have many, many programs that they can listen to, including yours. And this goes all over the world, and it's available 24/7, and it's archived, and as long as they stay in business, I guess. So your story today will help people without you having to tell it 100,000 times, because they'll be able to hear your story, and I think that it's very inspirational, and I applaud you for what you've done and the journey that you've been on, and I just want to tell you thank you for being you.
Absolutely. Absolutely, no problem.
Okay, so Greg, we're gonna end now, and thanks again, and I hope you have a wonderful life.
All right, well, thank you so much.